show about everything. This is Life Changes with Filippo, with unforgettable, ever-insightful conversations that captivate our fascination and insatiability for the inspiring moments of real-life journeys. This is a conversation that matters as we, as one, strive for higher planes of existence and a better understanding of our true selves and the world in which we live, always remembering life changes. This is radio like you've never felt before, with tonight's guest, author and independent researcher, Tom Fusco. And now your host, our MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. This is exciting to have Tom Fusco on the show today, because this makes it the show that I wish existed 8 years ago, 10 years ago, maybe even 20 years ago. Well, I was looking for something like this 20 years ago, or even beyond that. I come from an engineering background. I come from a scientific background. So when I started getting into the woo-woo or the spiritual or the new agey or trying to learn about some of these new concepts, everything was presented kind of woo-woo and new agey. And I'm thinking, well, where's the science? Where's the proof? And I understand that with faith and all that, you don't, you know, sometimes you have to get away from just looking at things scientifically. But I also understand that my engineering mind, my analytical mind, likes to know things, like give me some foundation. I knew it existed, I just didn't know where to find it. And now Tom, it feels like Tom has some of that for us, and I'm looking forward to having that conversation with him. And let me just tell you how the great lengths I would go to have a great monologue to present to you all today. Earlier today, I was cooking dinner, and I've never done this before. I've cut myself before, but I've never sliced myself before, or better yet, sliced a piece of me off. I am sitting here a few hours later with my finger held up and bandaged and all of that, and a piece of it missing. Because I was cooking myself dinner and proceeded to not only slice off half the nail on my, I think it's index finger, it's called, but also a piece of flesh completely off. So this show is different and special in its way, in its own way. But let me tell you, I remembered that I had read somewhere that saliva can help help a wound better than anything else. And in some naturopathic or something or other, I also read that if you put cayenne on your wound, that it would heal right away and actually help the skin regenerate, something or other, something like that. I heard that once, or read it once, and that's it. So now, here I had this wound, and I went to my medicine cabinet, and there, of course, were all of the things that you're quote-unquote supposed to do. There was the antibiotic this, and the this of that, and the chemical this, and all that stuff, and I had brought into the bathroom with me, where the medicine cabinet was, a bottle of cayenne. And I looked at the bottle of cayenne, and then I looked at all of these quote-unquote proven, scientifically proven methods that I am so used to, probably we all, but most of us, I am for sure, 9 out of 10 doctors recommend, quote-unquote, assuming it's even true, or 90% of the hospitals use this or something like this. And I'm thinking, this is my finger. I only have one. Well, I have two, but on this hand. And I still have many, many more years where I'm going to need this finger. Do I use cayenne that's only written on one website somewhere, probably by some lunatic now, I'm thinking, because I don't want to lose this finger, or I want the piece to grow back? Or do I use these things that we have been taught are the right things to use? And let me tell you, it was a hard decision. Let me tell you what I ended up with. I poured cayenne on that sucker. And let me tell you, I haven't cussed like that in a long time. That hurt. It hurt. Anyway, the cayenne, it stopped the bleeding. I mean, maybe because I had so much powder on it, Or maybe because it works. I don't know. Or my finger went into shock, but it stopped the bleeding. And I was able to put a bandage on it. And this was, there was a piece of meat missing. Not a huge piece, but huge enough. It was a chunk. Now, next week we can talk about, you know, whether I ended up having to amputate my finger or whether my finger is maybe completely healed. But the funny thing is that moment of, what do I believe? Do I believe what I've been told by all these scientists or what have you, or this woo-woo guy who says you do better by putting cayenne on it? Now, I think there's a happy in-between. And I don't think that there is enough of that in-between where we can say, this is the woo-woo stuff, and this is the science behind it, and this is why cayenne works, and that sure would have helped me in my decision. I trust I made the right decision. Surprisingly, it really doesn't hurt that much right now, which I would have expected it to hurt a lot more. So we'll see what happens. But I know that having had a basis in science, some of this woo-woo stuff would have just felt a lot better rather than just going on faith. And some of it might not even really be true. But the part that is, wouldn't it be nice to know that 9 out of 10 doctors really do recommend this? So I'm looking forward to having this independent researcher and author, Tom Fusco, to tell us about some of the woo-woo stuff and some of the scientific basis behind it right after this.
Oh. Clean water is not enough. Reverse osmosis, distilled water, and most bottled waters are devoid of naturally occurring minerals. They are acidic, unstructured, and hard to absorb, and rob minerals from the body. IonWays ionizers produce a super abundant supply of powerful antioxidants in each glass. Ionized water has a reduced molecular cluster size and a negative charge, hydrating you up to 6 times better. Water from an IonWays ionizer will help you restore your body to its natural pH balance, boosting your vitality. An ionized water more effectively flushes acidic toxins from within your body. Drink the healthiest water available today. IonWays water systems, their water changes everything. To learn more about IonWays water systems and how you can own one today, visit our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our sponsor page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
Well, we're back. I am Filippo, and our guest today is Thomas Fusco, who is an independent researcher who has devoted nearly 3 decades investigating the relationship between mind, physics, spirituality, parapsychology, scientific anomalies, and paranormal phenomena, with the goal of uncovering the unifying cosmological framework that has eluded mankind for generations. He's been invited to speak as a guest on over 100 national and international radio programs, including Coast to Coast this past week. He is the author of Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality that describes a new model of supernatural mechanics. Welcome to the show, Tom Fusco.
How you doing?
I've been better, but actually I'm pretty good.
I heard that in the beginning of the show there.
Well, there's a reason for everything, and I'm looking for this. So, you know, and that's interestingly enough, as far as you're concerned, you look at things that happen and you say, okay, there's a reason for everything, and you look for the basis behind some of the things like ghosts and miracles, or what we would call miracles and stuff like that. How did you get into that?
Well, I had some experiences in my teenage years and early 20s that would be considered, some people would call them psychic, parapsychological. In any event, they were sufficiently profound for me to call into question the picture of the world as science had given it to me. And I was always a very scientifically minded, pragmatic individual, and always kind of had to know why behind everything.
Right.
So the pressing question that these experiences brought up was, how could the universe possibly be put together in order to allow these kinds of events to occur? And so that began my exploration over several decades to come up with a physical model that would allow all these things to have their place in it.
Tom, I just have to ask you, we'll get into more of that. Just to go back a little bit, what was it that, did you see ETs? Did you see ghosts? Do you talk about this?
Well, I don't talk about it too much on the air.
Oh, okay. I'll call you later then.
Yeah. Well, other than to say that these were kinds of experiences where I had knowledge that I should not have had about events and people that were not directly in front of me, so to speak.
Mm.
And so when you begin to talk about things that you shouldn't know about and yet you do know, there has to be some way that that information comes to the human mind. And standard physics didn't really have a good model.
Right.
Quantum physics sort of kind of had things that were similar to that. And so one could kind of paint a broad stroke and say, well, gee, that's quantum physical. Information gets swapped back and forth between different particles in kind of a mysterious way. But still, that was not enough. It was too broad of a stroke, and I wanted something far more specific and tangible by which to go.
And, you know, Tom, I've been on this quest myself for finding out more of what the world, the universe, the life has to offer than what we believe is just our, you know, you live, you work your 9 to 5, then you sit home in front of a television, and then you go to bed and start it all over again. So I've been on this quest for many, many years, and it's been exciting on the one hand to see television shows and stories come out, movies come out about phenomenon that is not our usual 9 to 5, so to speak, three-dimensional world. And yet, at the same time, the way that they've been shown comes across as scary or very woo-woo, and it almost seems like it's counterproductive to the understanding of what these things are. Do you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And this comes from what I consider a number of mistaken paradigms and conventional ways of thinking that not only the lay people, but actually professionals and even scientists have labored under. For example, one of the very common misnomers that I came to understand was that people, as a general rule, have some sort of a belief that the reality that occurs within them is somehow different than the reality that occurs in the world. And so when you're considering, number one, that you believe that what is within yourself is a separate reality, and number two, since it does have to do with the self, and each self is unique and subjective, when you combine these two things, this is where you get what you call all the woo-woo ideas, where every time you hear some other sort of idea, it's what I call like the latest selection from the metaphysics boutique. It's what's on special this week, and next week it'll be called something else.
Right.
And you really, we go from these one thing, one idea to the next, and we see certain resonances and similarities between them, but nobody ever really nails down the given model.
Okay, so I know we'll get into some of this a little later, but I just can't resist to know. Give us an example of something that we would consider woo-woo or just paranormal or that you can explain away for us.
Well, for example, I guess the best way to do it is to try to give a correct model. In my opinion, and then compare that to the many different ideas that are out there.
Okay.
For example, It's a scientific principle that a system is established and defined by a set of laws and principles. We have lots of systems we could look at. I usually talk about a deck of cards that has 52 cards, 4 suits, 13 values. You can come up with a dizzying array of different hand combinations and game rules. In the end, all of those different variations will be consistent with the set of principles and laws that govern the deck of cards and establish the order of those of that deck. In other words, you're not going to pick up your hand after being dealt out of a 52-card deck and come up with a fifth suit of cards somewhere. So to extend that to the greater reality, the universe is such a system, and it is governed by a set of laws and principles. We know that the universe is put together just one way. There's a number of different scientific validations for that, that the laws of nature at the very edges of the universe are the same as they are here. It's put together one way. Now, if that system is governed by a specific set of laws and principles, every subset of that system is going to work in a way that is consistent with those greater laws and principles. No subset of that greater system is going to operate in a way that is contrary to or outside of those laws and principles. So now when we look at it that way, in other words, not egocentric, but universally centric, and we then look at ourselves secondly instead of primarily, we find that our human brains are actually a subset of the physical universe, which means that they work according to the exact same laws and principles that govern the greater universe. Our brains cannot function in a way that is contrary to or outside of that greater laws and principles. Now, that's a very profound realization.
You know,
because
Tom,
that means there's an abject, tangible reality to everything that goes on within ourselves. And furthermore, the order and the structure of those things that we imagine and experience and image and visualize are constructed according to the same laws and principles from which the greater universe is. And that opens up worlds of possibilities from a logical, pragmatic, and scientific approach.
You know, it's interesting, Tom, you say it opens up worlds of possibilities. At the same time, it closes others. And I've never really thought about it that way. But as I'm listening to you, this song came to mind from the musical Fantastics, where the words are, plant a radish, get a radish, not a turnip. You know, plant a carrot, get a carrot. And when we humans have babies, it's usually a human. Unfortunately, sometimes it could be deformed or sickly or something, but it's humanoid. It's not a dog. It's not a cat. So there are certain things that always give certain results. And I've never thought about that aspect of it. I've always thought about the infinity, or that isn't even correct now. We're not infinite. It's not infinite. Well, I'm confusing myself.
Well, this is certainly a different paradigm. It's like what I try to get people to imagine if they were someone who lived 3,000-4,000 years ago and they looked out up at the night sky. They would see that old paradigm, that Aristotelian paradigm with a crystalline sphere that had holes poked in it, that there was a light beyond that shone through, and that's where the stars came from. All the planets were in their own crystalline spheres. Now, we have a very different paradigm today. We look up at the night sky, and we see something very, very different. We understand stars of different locations and magnitudes and distances and galactic structures and the planets and how they actually move. Yet this exact same information is entering our eyes that entered the eyes of those people 3,000 or 4,000 years ago.
Right.
The difference of those paradigms are so different that this, it's almost like a cultural shock. I talk about, you know, if you took a 50,000-year-old or a caveman from 50,000 years ago, modern Homo sapiens, and was able to suddenly transport them into the passenger seat of a car going 50 miles an hour, the person would probably die from a heart attack.
Mm.
Because the shock of the paradigm would be so different than what they were accustomed to that they simply couldn't handle it. So clearly we have these pressing mysteries that continue to persist throughout our attempts to try to find the secrets of existence, so to speak. And when we consistently come up to the same brick walls over and over, the logical assumption must then be that the paradigm by which we're approaching these problems is wrong.
You know, Tom, if a caveman somehow were to be brought into our society, well, many of us could explain to him, actually almost even a child could explain to him, oh, it's just a car and it's, you know, we're going to be going this fast or whatever. But who's there to explain to us the new paradigm, which we obviously seem to be experiencing in so many ways, but don't understand what's going on?
Well, I think that reality, the universe, in some way seems to bring certain concepts and ideas out within the human species at certain times in history. Many people have commented on that, how uncanny it is that certain ideas came to fruition, maybe through several different individuals around the world at the same time. Mm. And so I think that, again, looking at it that the human brain is a subset of the greater universe, that the entire potential of the full volume of knowledge that we human beings could possibly contain about the universe and about the truth of ourselves is already programmed in our brains. It's just a matter of getting to them.
Wow. So I understand. I was about to say I understand that. What I'm understanding is that these are concepts whose time has come. And when I say who's here to share that information with us, well, people like yourselves, yourself, and other people that are writing books or speaking on this subject, whether from the side of physics or independent researchers like yourself. So there's something here, obviously, that we have to understand. It. In order for us to get to the next level, right?
Absolutely. And I firmly believe stepping back for a moment and rather than taking the traditional egotistical line of reasoning that considers our inner selves to be something separate and a different reality than that which is outside of ourselves, if we begin to understand that it really is like what Einstein talked about as a continuum, that everything is a continuum in different forms and locations in the exact same structure that's all across the universe, then we begin to start looking at the way our own minds function in a much different light, that we can give these kinds of, it has been a very common approach with philosophers, certain philosophers, to say that anything we can do, we can accomplish anything that we can imagine. But that's always been looked at from a philosophical and even an egotistical way. But when we understand that the human brain is actually configured to the same order of laws and principles that have established and constructed the entire universe around us, then we have an actual scientific foundation to know that it is an actual fact, a physical fact, that just because an image can be visualized in our minds means that that image has the potential to becoming physical reality.
So in a sense, this is almost touching on magic and miracles, right?
Absolutely. We look at miracles and we look at quote-unquote supernatural. We call that supernatural because it seems to defy the natural laws with which we are familiar. But when we look at it in this more holistic or inclusive way, we have to come to the understanding that the only reason why we call something miraculous or something supernatural is that we really don't understand the physics involved with it. From a broader or a higher viewpoint or perspective, we'd have to come to the conclusion, based on this newer paradigm, that there really isn't anything that is supernatural or miraculous. All these things happen according to a set of laws and principles that are actually hard-coded into the universe itself.
Well, so if we use the analogy of the proverbial caveman, and who presumably had to strike rocks or against each other in order to get a spark to create a fire, if we showed them a match, or better yet, a Bic lighter, they could say, ooh, magic.
Yes, exactly, because they don't understand the technology and the laws and principles that are involved. However, I would say out of those hundreds of thousands or millions of cave people, I'm sure that one of them at one time envisioned in their mind, wouldn't it be great if we just had something that where all we'd have to do is kind of snap our fingers and we could make fire? And they could actually imagine that in their minds.
I think
now, the very
person...
fact that they could image that in their minds means that it is indeed a possibility. It may have taken us a long time to find the missing information necessary to make it real. But the fact that we could actually conceive it is the evidence itself that it can be reality.
I shudder to think, but I tend to think that the person who thought of that was burned at the stake.
Well, that could have had a lot to do with the time that he or she existed also.
Exactly. Well, we're talking to Tom Fusco about all kinds of things, actually, and his book, Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, Merging Science, the Spiritual, and the Supernatural. If you want to learn more about Tom, of course, you could always go to lifechangeswithfilippo.com, or you can go directly to Tom's website at cosmicveil.com. That's cosmicveil.com. And we'll be right back with Tom and our producer, Mark Legere, to have a tete-a-tete amongst the three of us right after this.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with our host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can hear tonight's show and all our past shows, which include luminaries such as David Wilcock, Mariel Hemingway, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Marcy Shymoff, and Shadow Stevens on our archive page at our website at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.com. Remember, you can also connect with us via Twitter and Facebook, and now in our own community at lifechangesnetwork.com, where real people come together to share real life in real time. That's lifechangesnetwork.com.
Well, we're back. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and today we're talking to Tom Fusco, who is an independent researcher as well as the author of Behind the Cosmic Veil, a new vision of reality that describes a new model of supernatural mechanics. And we also have, of course, our producer, Mark LeJour, who I know has a burning question.
You could call me Tom.
You can call you Tom, okay.
Tom, I wanted to jump on here and see if I could help Filippo put a finger on this.
Oh, my.
drilling down, this is a great discussion, but where I wanted to drill down a little further and get your insight is that I've been in my own research and learning kind of walking the line between what you were suggesting in terms of the brain being a subset of the universe and the other angle of perception on that, which is the brain being a tool for resonance or an energetic catalyst for this greater cumulative Akashic, brain, the universal mind. So yeah. Tap into that collective as opposed to the universe within us, right? There's two schools of thought almost in the way that people try to explain this.
Yes, there is. And for me, when you say Akashic, that's very important because one of the elements of my model, my theory, is that I have adopted this concept of a structure or an order, what we would call today in the computer age, a body of coherent information that actually exists separate from and outside of space-time. What I call it is a kind of a superphysical overlay that lays on top of dimensional space-time, which I call supergeometry. And that this body of information actually establishes and dictates the nature and the order of our own universe. Then the next aspect of it is to understand that everything in the universe is materialized information. That's the key. Out of the thousands of different ways that we could look at the universe, if we stand at that particular spot and say the universe is an expression of materialized information, then that begins to unify all these different fields and even physics itself.
Well, I get it. And so then I, for myself, take it a step further in trying to understand it, and maybe for our listeners, that the limits now, that is unlimited potentiality. Right, that field of information that you're talking about, and so now the only limit there is based on the angle of perception of the individual's programming, it's where they came from, what time they lived in, what they've had, have they experienced that Bic lighter or the bumping rocks together, and therefore, what is their angle of perception in terms of looking into that field in terms of imagining and creating. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Absolutely. The only thing that I would add to that is that when I would, instead of using the word unlimited, I would qualify that and say that the possibilities are unlimited within the confines and restraints of the laws and the principles that govern the greater system. Now, our individual brains being a subset of that system, I don't believe we can ever contain within our minds the full volume and breadth of what is the universe, because we are contained within it. Mm. We cannot contain or surround it ourselves. And every individual has a slightly different collection of information, so to speak, from that greater whole. So we each, in our own egotistical selves, and I mean that from a scientific way, not from an emotional or psychological way, but our egotistical selves, we tend to look at our own body of information as the standard by which we judge the universe. And that's where we run into a lot of problems and many different conflicting opinions, because we're using an incomplete standard by which to measure the completeness of the universe itself, if that makes sense.
That makes complete sense. And I guess the other thing then, and that's validating what I was saying and feeling, in that the limitations from our perspective are those egoic limitations in terms of, you know, the difference between one's belief patterns, right? Some people can heal themselves from cancer and basically anything, and other people can catch a cold just by going on a public bus, right? So there's completely different perceptions as to what is possible or what defines their universe.
Yes, absolutely. And there's also a limitation in capacity as well. In other words, our minds may be tiny microcosms of the order, the universal order that governs greater reality. And so because of that, we have certain limitations. So, for example, a single mind can only do so much. If you put two minds together, we find that they can actually do more together in unison than the sum total of the two. And then it grows in multiplicity. But again, if we took every human brain on the face of the earth and were able to synchronize it and coordinate it in one thought, it's probably believable to think that we might be able to affect something on a global scale, but we probably would not be able to affect something in a galaxy that was, let's say, 50 light years away.
Well, this takes me to a theory that I've been working on, but I'm not ready to talk about it. I think I'm going to have to read more of your book. And it also reminds me of at the end of a movie, was it Stargate, I think, or one of those where a woman wants to have all the knowledge of the world or the universe, and then as she starts to get it, she blows up. So anyway, it was quite fun movie. But Tom, there's so much that we could talk about that your book has to offer fodder for a great conversation. But there's one that I wanted to touch on in the last few minutes that we have together, because it seems to come up a lot for those of us who are becoming, I should say, conscious of some of what's been done or is going on in the world. And so I know you like to talk about the role that evil plays in the physical universe. I think that's fascinating.
Yes, evil's been something that we've talked about, humanity has talked about for a very, very long time. It plays a fundamental role in most of our religious and spiritual beliefs. And we do seem to have some sort of an innate sense of what each of us would constitute as evil. But again, this has always been philosophical, speculative, ecclesiastical, and even metaphysical. It's never had any hard connection with the functions of physics themselves or itself. So the way I looked at it is this, and of course I'm a Christian, so I'm going to look at these things according to how the Bible defines them. But there's a lot that we can derive from that. So first of all, what I do is I take an idea about the Creator. And based on the Bible, the Creator God is all-knowing, all-seeing, is infinite, timeless. There is no beginning or end. So he has no temporal dimensioning. And furthermore, that it says that there is no variation within him, that essentially he is absolutely pure. There's no change or variation, which means there's no spatial dimensions there either. Now, let's say this Creator God decided that he wanted to create a universe like ours, which is basically the exact opposite nature of him. The universe will have a beginning. It had a beginning. Most physicists believe it'll have some sort of an end. It is in constant change and turmoil. Substances constantly combine, break down, recombine. We have these great fields of or areas of controlled imbalances, like the way our solar system is put together. Everything is changeable. Things live and die. They corrode, so on and so forth. Well, how is this this God supposed to produce a world like this? Well, the first thing is he can't produce it inside of himself. There would be no way that could happen. Even in our mathematical physics, we understand that when you bring values of space and time up to the point of infinity, dimensions cease to exist. They just disappear.
Mm.
So we have a scientific validation mathematically. This is why we say we can't propel a mass like a spaceship to the speed of light. Because the second mathematically we reach it to the speed of light, we find, number one, that it obtains infinite mass, which is a physical impossibility. And we find that we require infinite energy to propel it to that velocity, which is another impossibility. So our mathematics actually confirms this biblical concept. So God would have had to create a realm outside of himself. So that's one. And, of course, the Bible says things like, Paul the Apostle said, while we are in these bodies, we are exiled from God. Flesh and blood cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. And things like this. But this is just one step. The other step is this. If God is a pure substance, where does he get the differences that are necessary to create all the differences in our universe? From a very basic standpoint, since we live within a realm of space-time, as Einstein proved for us, that we have the spatial dimensions and the temporal dimension, the spatial dimensions are an expression of differences between here and there. And the temporal dimensions are an expression of differences between then and now. And so none of these things are in God. So in order for him to give rise to these differences, he would have had to have an adversary. He would have had to have an exact opposite antithesis. So here we take a pure absolute positive and a pure absolute negative and cause them to collide in a center area. And that area of collision, which I call a zone of conflict, now gives rise to differences. And what my theory says is this actually gives rise to three-dimensional wave functions that are super light. They exist outside the speed of light. But as the conflict intensifies, they decelerate from that friction, so to speak, until they begin to reach the speed of light. And then as they reach the speed of light and below, they materialize according to the order of this body of information that also exists out there. So everything in the universe is bipolar, so to speak. It has substances of that absolute positive and that absolute negative influences. And so I call that diffluence, that three-dimensional substance diffluence. And I actually, in my book, have this sketched out in a diagram to show how this physically occurs.
Wow, the book we're talking about is Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, Merging Science, the Spiritual, and the Supernatural. And Tom, you've given us a taste here. And what you basically just said in those last few statements there is that there had to be evil in order for us to have the current universe that we have now. And so now we have that. And I am assuming that we're moving on to other things, getting closer to God and moving away from this separation in a minute or less. Is that pretty much what's happening?
Well, when we realize that that is the nature of existence, first of all, we come to peace in a way with the idea. In other words, it resolves this age-old philosophical question that if God is good, why is there evil in the world? Why do children die? Why are there wars? Why do bad things happen to good people? And what this is it shows us a model that this is how it has to be. And, of course, what I say myself personally, I will take my existence and the life that I have within it and have to deal with the turmoils of evil as opposed to the alternative, which is non-existence.
Okay. Okay, I like that, actually. I like that a lot, and I've liked this conversation a lot. And if you're liking what you've been hearing, of course, you can always hear it again at lifechangeswithfilippo.com or lifechangesnetwork.com, and or you could go to buy the book at cosmicveil.com, cosmicveil.com, and you can learn more about Tom there, other places he will be speaking, other radio shows and other appearances that he's going to be making, book signings, etc., etc., etc. So, Tom, this has been a lot of fun. I know you and I have tried to connect on many occasions, and it finally happened.
Yes, it did. Yeah, I'm glad. Thank you very much for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
It's been a lot of fun, and we're going to go on to a break here, and when we come back, we're going to do a producer's segment with our producer, Mark Lejeune. But in the meantime, my best to you, Tom, and all the best to your book.
Thank you very much, and the same to you.
All right, grazie. Ciao, ciao.
Life Changes with Filippo is a premier radio show presented by Life Changes Network, which is a company whose team has dedicated their lives not only to positive change, but to helping others observe and embrace, honor, and even celebrate their own changes, thus enabling a more positive, inspired life and helping to create a more positive and inspired world. From everyday people to corporate giants, celebrities, and children, we are here to help and to serve. With heart and experience, we bring our message and positive intent into your home or corporate office, and even through appearances on your favorite shows. If you wish to learn more about Life Changes Life Coaching and a private consultation with one of us, corporate event appearances, or if you would like us to appear on your radio or TV shows, visit lifechangeswithfilippo.com and click on our representation page. You are listening to Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network with your host, Filippo Voltaggio. You can visit us online via Twitter and Facebook and at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O.
And Tom Fusco has been our guest, and we've had a lot of fun with him. And we're back now with the producer's wrap. I am Filippo, and Mark Lejeune is right beside me. What are you thinking?
We could have had more fun with Tom if you had cut your monologue a little bit short.
Instead, I cut my finger. Next time, I'll cut the monologue short and leave my finger intact, actually. And my finger will soon be intact because I put cayenne on it. And, you know, the funny thing is in the middle of the show, I went to scratch my face or something, and the cayenne that's still on my finger proceeded to go up my nose somehow. And I three times, I almost sneezed on the truth.
Well, I wish we were on video for this episode, because it'd be fun for our listeners, would-be viewers, to be watching you hold that finger up in the air through the entire interview.
Actually, I think it would be more fun for the viewers to be seeing you imitate me with both fingers every once in a while. But this conversation actually was so apropos. I thought I did a great job with the monologue, even fingerless. Because it's like in that moment of like the whole evil in the world thing, in that moment when there's that we get so frustrated with evil, it's good to know that there's a reason for it.
Well, I think we're frustrated with evil because, again, this goes back to what we were saying about perception and programming. We have a definition that has been handed to us from various learnings, whether it be religion, whether it be cultural bias, or witnessing certain events, history, etc., that define evil. And yet, if you step away from the definition of evil, in fact, I think it's probably the wrong word to use, because what we're doing here is we're experiencing contrast, and therefore all of these other aspects of evil are really other aspects of vibration, which is all, across the pole of this plot positive down into the negative vibrations of what would be the shadow of creation that he's talking about. Mm. The opposite of good, the opposite of love would be, would be evil.
Mm. Mark, you as a singer would really appreciate this. I don't know if we've ever talked about it, but in choruses, and I've been part of many, You're smiling. Did I just take it out of your? Oh, I'm pointing with my finger. Is what he's laughing at. It's up anyways. I might as well use it for something. And you better careful that I don't spray cayenne on you.
I'm waiting for you to do a Nixon
impression. I'm too young to know that reference. But anyways, but in a chorus, like at one point, I was in a chorus of 120 men and women, and there's bound to be one or two people, if not 5 or 10, a good percentage of people that sing slightly out of tune. And it's actually built in. Like, you have to have a slightly out of tuneness in order to sound natural.
Mm.
And when music has been made electronically, people know it's electronic because something doesn't feel right. So what has actually been done to the electronic instruments is to actually put in elements that are slightly out of tune.
That alter the frequency slightly enough to be able to demonstrate just what we were saying, contrast.
Exactly. Otherwise, the human ear says there's something, it doesn't sound like me, it doesn't sound right. Because there isn't that.
Well, if there's no contrast, then it's all the same. If it's all the same, then it's one voice. If it's one voice, then there isn't a choir or chorus or symphony, right? Which goes back to what a great metaphor for life.
And like Tom was saying, it, like in order for mass to move at the speed of light, it has to, first of all, you need, what do you say, infinite energy or something like that, or all the energy in the universe. So if everybody sounded, if all 120 voices sounded like one voice, well, what do you need 120 voices for, first of all? And it's not possible.
Yeah, you could definitely save some money on the
go to see a chorus of one. Or a chorus line. Singing one. All right. So this has been good because these are conversations that I know you and I have, and Dorothy, you and I have, and several of our friends, and this circle is growing. And now with authors and researchers like Tom and books like this, we can have this conversation with some scientific basis.
Well, that's one of the most important things that we ask ourselves, right? The minute something bad happens, something that doesn't feel good, the minute that happens, we immediately challenge the very existence, you know, our very existence, or why. Why is that happening to me? Why is that happening at all? Why would a good God let that happen, et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is, you know, a friend of mine once told me during one of my more challenging periods of life, you know, Mark, in order to know what up is, you have to be down. And what a simple way of explaining that. There would be no reference point for all of the good that does happen around us if we don't have that contrast. And how boring would that be? So you come here to experience that. Does it feel good? No. But eventually, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and you're getting those types of results, you'll probably change and you'll probably go back to doing something or relearn new habits that create the positive side of things that you're looking for. So it's all about contrast, and it always seems that at the end of the day, the pluses outweigh the minuses.
You know, that's interesting. Sometimes we don't apply that same philosophy to greater things that are not greater in the sense that they're great, but they're great in the sense that they're greater in the sense that they're huge things going on in the world. But we often say about certain things, I thought that was a horrible thing, or I'm glad it happened, or it seemed horrible at the time, or it was horrible. But if that hadn't happened, then this wouldn't have happened, and I wouldn't be this, I wouldn't be that. And so on a grander scale.
Well, how could anyone, if you really think about it, how can you eliminate, or where do you draw the line? How do you say, okay, we're gonna give you an existence of contrast, a duality, an ability to live out, you know, the positives and the good feelings and the bad feelings, but these really bad things can't happen, or those really really good things can't happen. You can't draw the line. You can't exclude certain aspects of what free will allows. You know, free will has to be endless, which means anything is potential. complete ecstasy or, you know, tragedy, complete tragedy.
You know, that's so funny that you're saying this, because I was just thinking this yesterday. I was watching some viral video on YouTube, and it made me think of how when we want experiences, some of us go to such extremes to have an experience. Or, like, again, as an actor in plays that I've done, I always wanted to play the guy that got killed, or somehow I ended up playing, you know, or the bad guy, or something that was, like, really out there, just to have that experience.
So many actors choose those roles, those tragic roles, those deep, dark roles. Singers like to sing the sad song.
Yeah.
But it gives you an opportunity to step out of that box. And what experience? Experience contrast. Experience the other side. So what if what we are doing in that all of the world is a stage?
Exactly.
We're here to experience contrast.
Elvis said that, didn't he?
I think so, but he's on an island down there.
But before him, I think it was that Bill Shakespeare guy. But yeah, no, exactly. So what if we put on this costume, come here, and one of us said, hey, I want to be crippled. Oh, that's a good one. Okay, then I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to cut off my finger.
I thought it was the same thing.
And if that's the worst that I'm going to do to myself from now on, I think we're going to be doing pretty good. Well, I've enjoyed this. This has been so much fun. Mark just gave me the finger. I think that he's even the index finger. He's pointing that it's a wrap. Either that or he's making fun of mine. But this has been a lot of fun. We've enjoyed Tom Fusco on the show. This is Filippo Voltaggio saying, first of all, thank you to our producer, Dorothy Donahue, and Mark Lejeur, and our engineer, Seth Hendricks. And a big thank you to all of you for being part of this show and part of the beautiful changes we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes with Filippo, with the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on the BBS Radio Network, and visit us online at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. Today's show has been made possible in part by our sponsors, IonWays Water Systems, Change Your Water, Change Your Life, and Love and Miracles with Dorothy Lee Donahue. To learn more about them, visit the sponsor page of our website. Once again, join us here next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. Change the world. Now's the time.